What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Yes, sir. You heard the man finishing out the week with you. Appreciate you coming along with us. 713-572-4610 to text the show. You can also get in touch with the show through the YouTube and Twitch streams as well. Right away from the 832 says, no, I need a mouth guard, and I always chew gum. Telling you, there's something to this theory.
Luke, you got something started here, man.
Yeah, that's what we do. Sports talk and PSAs. We're here to help the people. So, yeah, that was a theory. I chewed gum too much. Now, I haven't chewed gum in years, and I still grind my teeth, so maybe the theory does not apply.
Now, was it a dentist that told you this, or just like a random somebody?
I think it was more of a random somebody. Right?
Oh, see, come on now. We can't be taking medical advice from just random folks on the street now.
I take more medical advice from Reddit than I do any other source. I'm a big Reddit guy.
Reddit is definitely a source.
I love Reddit.
Not always the most viable source, but a source nonetheless.
Yeah. I think Reddit is the best website on the internet. And I go there for everything.
Why is that? Why the best?
I don't know, because you can get everything on there. It's not as good as it used to be. They have some more limitations there. They've banned certain, they've become a little more strict in recent years with some of the movement of the online culture. But you got everything on there. It's a great community. I think it's better than any of the other social medias. And anything you need, any discussion you're looking for, any question to an answer, forget the AI overview, which is terrible on Google. Go right to Reddit. Thank me later.
Tyler, let's bring in T-Mill real quick.
What up, boys?
Are you a Reddit guy? What's going on, brother?
Not much, man. Happy Friday. I've never really been a Reddit guy, I guess. I've never really been on that app.
Missing out.
I'm just starting to get into it the last few years.
Yeah.
So I think I kind of missed out on a lot of stuff, but
yeah, I've always known about it, heard about it, heard good things like Luke was saying you can find out there, but I've never been a Reddit guy.
Yeah, I'm just starting to get into it a little more.
And the founder of Reddit is married to one of the Williams sisters. Serena? Which one? Which one did the Crip Walker?
It's Serena.
Yeah,
so it's Serena,
married.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's married. I wonder what he thought about that when she was on the national stage of the Super Bowl trolling one of her exes. And he's like, we've been married for a few years. Haven't you moved on? Well, that's a whole other conversation. Let's start with the Astros. Good to be here on a Friday, taking you up until, of course, 6 o'clock and then to your weekend, hopefully.
Hopefully.
The Astros lost last night against the A's on another walk-off. So, three of their last five games have ended in walk-off fashion, two of those being losses in this A's series. You bookend the series with the two walk-off losses, but in between you get the two nice wins where your offense erupts, albeit against the second-worst pitching staff in the second-hitter-friendliest ballpark. Still, you split this series with the lowly A's, you lose two close games, you win two good games. I know a lot of Astro fans are kind of upset, like, oh man, we only split with the A's. Chris, how do you come out of this series feeling with two wins, two losses for the Astros?
I mean, if you're just looking at this in a vacuum here, then yeah, I won't say you're worried, but it is a thing where we split with the A's. I just feel like you should always, at least if you're not going to sweep everybody, but you should be beating the A's 3-1 just about every time. You really should. I don't care if it's on the road, and we're probably going to get into this as well. Of the Astros still kind of trying to get those road woes under control.
Yeah.
They're still under 500. I mean, even though they're 10 games over 500 now, they're still a few games under 500 on the road. And, yeah. And eventually, I know it's still June, halfway through June, but eventually, if they kind of stay where they're at on the road, that's going to become an issue. Good teams or teams that are actually going to go far in the postseason, usually they're pretty decent on the road. Like, not under 500, even if they're right around 500. And they're only three games under it right now, but we're almost to July, and you're still kind of struggling on the road.
Yeah, well, just to add context to it, they have the fourth best record at home this year, 27-13. Really good. They're right up there with awesome. The Mets, Tigers, Dodgers, three of the best teams in baseball. The Astros, obviously, overall records not far behind those teams. But to your point, on the road, they're an under 500 team, 16-19. Now, you might say, well, most teams struggle on the road. Yes, but that puts them a 19th out of 30 teams. So bottom 11, yeah. Bottom 12, whatever it is, bottom 11. So, yeah, not ideal. And I think especially come playoff time, look, if you have home field advantage, just win your home games. But I think I'm still old school enough to subscribe to the cliche that to win championships, you got to win on the road. Unless, you know, maybe if you just have home field advantage all the way through. The Astros most likely won't, though. They won't be the one seed. Maybe they'll catch up to the Tigers. Right now, they're the two seed in the AL.
Yeah.
But on paper, I know, like, if you just go off of the odds, they're not projected to be the number one seed of the AL, even with how well they've played. So my point being, if you want to compete in the playoffs, you got to be able to win on the road. And they have not been good enough on the road so far to really give you a lot of faith in that.
No, they really haven't. And I mean, there's a lot that goes into that. Obviously, we can rehash the injuries and the slow start for not just individual players, but really the team in general, especially when it comes to hitting. You know, the slow start hitting now over the past month and a half or whatever has been, they've looked a lot better, which is one of the reasons why they're back, you know, looking like, I don't want to say the Astros of old, but getting close to that. And you still got guys that are trying to get healthy, whether it be on the pitching staff.
A lot of guys.
Or, you know, guys whose bats you need, right, in the lineup. So, but eventually you just kind of expect them to, once you get some of these key players back into the lineup, back on the roster, on the active roster, I have to say, you just expect them to turn it around on the road. Because at home, like you said, fourth best record in the league, right?
Yeah. They've been great.
So they're fine.
They've won almost 70% of their home games.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to turn things around on the road because I do believe that if you're going to be a viable contender to take it all the way, win the World Series, you got to start winning more of these road games. Because eventually, if you're not going to be the number one seed, then you're going to have to win some road games. More, you know, win more than just the home games.
Yeah.
And you can't just hold court.
Typically, no. We see it a lot of times in the NBA, you know, that just like the higher seed, if you have home court, you win at home, you lose on the road.
Yeah.
And if you have home court, you can win the series. But I think it's a little bit different in baseball, especially if you're not going to be the top seed. We'll spin it forward in just a moment and talk about the biggest concerns for this Astros team. But just getting back to my original question about how you feel about this series, I actually come away, look, of course you don't want to split with the A's, and I don't subscribe necessarily to moral victories, but I feel similar to, well, I guess the opposite, but for the same reason, to that series back in the end of May against the Tampa Bay Rays, where they won 2-1 run games and got blown out in two losses, split that series with the Rays, and I was on the air here the next day, and I said, this feels like a loss, even though you split the series because of that whole run differential, that the idea being, analytically, that one-run victories are kind of fluky or can be luck-based,
yeah.
And if you get blown out, right, that's obviously, that looks worse than just a one-run game and vice versa. So I think it's similar here where the losses were these walk-off losses where Josh Hader, for the first time last night, finally gave it up, you know, in his second inning of an appearance, which is not always ideal for him. Also a non-save situation. You can crunch all the numbers. He's not as good in the second inning. He's not as good, non-save, so on and so forth. And meanwhile, the two wins, because of the run differential, I think outweigh those losses. So, of course, you want to win a series against the A's. I still come away feeling good because of that run differential. I know that doesn't impact the win-loss record, but I think it's a very good indicator of how well a team's actually playing, run differential in all sports.
Definitely.
And so you saw that, obviously, they were clearly the better team than the A's. They just suffered a couple tough losses this week.
I think what you're talking about, it really points to the inconsistency that we've seen a lot of this year offensively, where, you know, one game they'll score a ton of runs, get all the run support, they're usually going to have the pitching there, and then the next game they may score one or two runs. Like, I think one of those games against the Rays, they lost 2-1, right? So, yeah, I mean, I think that kind of points to the inconsistency that you're talking about. Like, what, two of those games, the bats are clicking, another game, it's just not. It's just not working for them.
Yeah, it's true where these one-run losses, at least in these two series, the A's and the Rays, have been those pitcher duels that they just haven't pulled out. And then the wins, in this case this week, is when the bats really erupted. Yeah. In what was certainly a hitter-friendly situation against the A's and in that ballpark. You know, I was on, as we said in the crosstalk, I was with John Lopez yesterday here for on these airways for In the Loop. And it's funny because yesterday I was saying, you know, if the Astros haven't been derailed yet by everything that's gone on, what could possibly derail this team? And I praised the Altuve move to left field, and I praised this bullpen. I was not confident about this bullpen entering the season, and now they're one of the best bullpens in the league. And somebody texted the show, a few people texted the show yesterday and saying, but my biggest concern is that we play down to the level of competition. And so I bring all this up because it's just funny that it all played out last night where Altuve has the error. They lose. They play down to the level of their competition, lose a game they shouldn't. The bullpen serves up the loss in extra innings. And it's like, man, I was just on the radio yesterday talking about all these things positively, and now they all shown themselves in the ugly fashion last night. So it brings me to my question, Chris, that the Astros, despite all the adversity, still are playing such good baseball. They have one of the best records in the league. But with that said, what is your biggest concern for this team now moving forward? And maybe we already answered it with the road struggles.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, that was, I mean, obviously, I guess the biggest worry is the injuries. I mean, you know, and you can say that for any team, but this team has had a lot of injuries, even in the pitching staff. And you see the, like you just talked about, the bullpen is still one of the best in the league, right?
Yeah, it is.
So I think resiliency is the word, is probably the word of the season right now for the Astros. They've been resilient enough to overcome all these odds. When you throw all this stuff, you know, all the injuries, bats out of the lineup, or guys in and out of the lineup, all the pitchers that have gone down, and seemingly some still aren't back, that, you know, some should have been back. And we know how the Astros are when it comes to disclosing or talking about injuries. They're not very transparent all the time. So, but they've been very, just to me, they've been very resilient in overcoming all that, when I think most teams would not have been able to overcome or recover from what we've seen the Astros go through this season. So in terms of worry, I think the injuries are the main thing. You just think about it. If they have most of these guys in the lineup, whether it be pitching staff or hitters, they may have the best record in the American League at this point, you know, with a lot of these guys in the lineup. So, again, we go back to the road worries. That's what worries me the most right now, is on the road. And I guess, you know, you talked about the you just pointed to how you praised the Altuve move to left field. Mm-hmm. But then more recently, we've also seen him play a little bit more second base than we did in that first month or two of the season. So I guess just finding that, you know, consistent spot, and he's finally starting to hit the last month and a half or so. Because early on, it just wasn't clicking. Now, I don't know if that was due to the move to left field, or maybe he's just in his own head, whatever it is, but it was looking rough there for a little while for Altuve as far as hitting goes, which we know he usually hits the ball above anything else. He's going to usually hit, but he's getting back to that. But yeah, like I said, for me right now, the biggest worry is getting back on track on the road, because you definitely want to get back above 500 on the road, because at some point when you get late in the season, you're going to have to win some tough road games more than likely, especially when it comes to seeding. If you want to get that number one seed, you're probably going to have to end up winning some tough road games down the stretch. So you want to get back on track there, and that's what I'm looking at. But I mean, what would you, I guess, attribute, I guess, that you just talked about how they, someone texted in and said they played down.
Yeah. I don't know.
How can a team be that confident with all these issues they're having? Like, maybe they're just used to being, you know, where they are. I mean, the Astros have been a contender for a decade now.
Yep.
Like a legitimate contender. Won some World Series, been to another one. They've, you know, they've won consistently for a decade now. But what do you attribute that to them if they are playing down? If you do buy into that,
Yeah, I don't know, because I do buy into it because I think the numbers kind of bear it out, and this is not a 2025 problem. For Astro fans, no, this is not something new. This has been a thing with them. I don't get it. I think typically it's like a lack of focus or maybe even like respect towards the opponent. You could take someone lightly, but I find it hard to believe that a team like the Astros would be doing that so consistently. So I don't know. Maybe it's just a phenomenon. But if you look at the Astros this year, for example, against teams with winning records, they're 27-20, which is pretty darn good compared to the rest of the league, 7 games over .500. Yeah. Against teams with losing records, still over .500, but 16-12. So they do, you know, it sounds like one of those things that fans just say of, oh, like, you know, we always play to the level of competition. Well, statistically, yeah, the Astros do play better against good teams, and they're closer to five. They're not much better than .500 against the bad teams. They just split a series against the A's.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the common answer, the general answer is typically like, you know, like I said, a lack of focus or just not locking in on that team because they're not a very good opponent. But I just find it hard to believe that that would consistently happen with this organization over the last couple of years.
Man, I guess in a 162-game season, there are going to be games where you just kind of...
That's true.
I don't want to say you take it easy, but you just kind of, all right, you go through the motions almost.
Well, 100%, especially on just getaway days, first and foremost.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
for all teams.
I guess that's probably part of the equation as well. I mean, Tyler, I don't know how you feel about this. I mean, you watch this team as closely as anybody. But, I mean, what can you attribute that to?
What's the question?
The Astros playing down, if they are playing down to the opponents.
I've never bought into that whole thought of playing down to competition. I mean, these are professional athletes. This is, and when you're talking about the Astros, like you just laid out there, I mean, they've had success in a massive way for the better part of a decade. So I don't buy into that as it is with any given squad. But whenever you're talking these Astros, I definitely don't. Because, I mean, these guys are pros. They're out there on the diamond every day to win games. That's what their job is. We come in here every day to talk into these microphones, yeah, do the best damn show we can for the audience. Those guys are doing the same damn thing, and it's their livelihood. So I've never really bought into that.
I got you.
I think moving forward to get back to the main question with the Astros about the concern, I think the biggest thing, of course, is those injuries. When, if ever, will it catch up to them?
Yeah.
On the text line from 936, they said, just think when we get our two best hitters and two pitchers back. Yes, of course, I'm with you. And we'll actually dive more into that later on this afternoon. But then also with the Astros, you always have to wonder, like, when will it actually happen? Because we know these injury timelines.
That's the thing.
Yeah, have to be taken with a huge grain, with a whole salt shaker of salt.
We frequently hear, oh, yeah, it can be about any of these players that are injured. Oh, yeah, he's looking good. He's taking some swings, maybe in the next week or two. Usually not even a time frame. But it's just kind of a general statement a lot of times from Joe Espada, even the GM at times, speaking about these players. So it's hard, and I know it's tough for fans because you want to know whether it's because you gamble or whether it's just because you're a diehard fan.
Feel like that was directed at me, Partee.
Well, hey.
No shade, dog. No shade.
Injury reports were created in the NFL just for the gamblers.
Hey, I'm just saying, you know. Hey, but if that's your thing, and Tyler, you're good at what you do. You have some down days every now and then, but you're good at what you do overall.
Thank you.
You're good at what you do.
Yeah, you're not speaking any lies.
I know I'm not. I would never gaslight anybody. Come on now.
The drive's not about gaslighting.
No. Yeah.
So. We talked about the struggles on the road for the Astros. Probably should be better against some of these lesser teams. The last thing I'll throw in before we go to break, it's this weird paradox where they lead the league in runs scored with two outs, but they still struggle a lot of times with runners in scoring position. And last night, I think they were like 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position. You had the leadoff man at second in the ninth inning with your 2-3-4 hitters coming up and a chance to take the lead and eventually win that game, and you couldn't score Pena. And you lose in 10. So it's this really weird thing where they still struggle, especially with the bases loaded. They struggle at runners in scoring position. But with two outs, they're actually the best team in the league. So it's this strange thing where I can't say they're unclutch, because in one scenario, they are pretty clutch. But then when it comes to batting with runners in scoring position, not very clutch.
Astros ain't loyal.
504 said if the Astros were playing down to competition, they'd be a really crappy team. I guess that's saying they play a lot of bad teams. I mean, I know the division hasn't been great.
I mean, you know, What do we always say about the NFL? You can only play who's on your schedule.
It's true.
You play who's in front of you.
And in
nothing
our
they
case,
can do about that.
Here in Houston, the Texans and the Astros in recent years have benefited from the divisions they're in.
Very true.
Hey, coming up, obviously, Ime signed that long-term contract with the Rockets yesterday. What sort of impact, if any, will it have on the rest of the offseason for the Rockets? We'll get to that next. It's The Drive.
I'm so high on the Rockets.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features Swift Rinse Tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
MLB.tv is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, Houston fans, I am so happy.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
How does the Ime contract impact the rest of the offseason for the Houston Rockets? Get to that here on The Drive. Luke Morrow and Chris Partee in for the fellas, but T-Mill holding things down on the steel wheels. And you as well. 713-572-4610 is the text line to join the conversation. 713 agreed with me earlier saying Reddit is the best of all social medias. Yes, sir. And another 713 said, mouth guard for grinding teeth is from doctors. That's a great thing. I don't need it, but others have. No, I understand that part. I was saying the theory of the chewing gum leading to grind teeth, that grinding teeth, that necessarily did not come from doctors. I don't know. Yeah. But yes, absolutely, the mouth guard.
Definitely from doctors. I mean, I have a really good friend, one of my best friends back in California. He sleeps with a mouth guard because he grinds his teeth in his sleep, but not from chewing gum as far as I know. I don't know. I'll have to ask him again, but I don't think it came from chewing gum.
Yeah, they also say it could be stress, but I'm never a stressed guy. I don't know.
But
what
sometimes
other
you don't know that you're stressed initially.
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like we talked about earlier, life seems to be pretty good with you right now, so I don't know what you're stressing over. You know, hopefully you're not stressing.
I don't know.
Maybe it's just a reaction. I don't know. It's weird.
It is weird.
It's one of those things. But I hear a lot of people do that, though.
Yeah.
Grind your teeth in their sleep.
Yeah, which it stinks. Because even with the mouth guard cured me like 90%. But every once in a while, you wake up with one of those migraines and you know, like, man, yeah, this is going to bug me all day. Anyways, we got the contract extension for Ime yesterday, making one of the highest paid coaches in the league. Long-term deal. He already had 2 years left on the contract. Now you extend it. I was on air with John Lopez yesterday when the news broke. But, Chris, what were your initial thoughts or impressions when you got this news that the Rockets are making this long-term commitment to their head coach?
I mean, I think it's a good idea, but, you know, like most people or a lot of people, the first thing I thought was, okay, he has 2 years left. There wasn't a lot of talk that I heard of before the last couple of weeks or last few weeks when we heard that the Knicks had interest. So was this a knee-jerk reaction to another team having interest in their head coach? I'm not saying they did the wrong thing, but still got 2 years left. You didn't have to do this right now. So a lot of times when we see coaches get interest from another team, then you will soon after see that extension follow, even if they have a couple years left on their current deal.
Yeah,
that's all I'm, again, not saying it's the wrong thing. I think he's been great for this franchise, right?
Yeah,
we've seen the results over the last 2 years. They've improved both seasons under him. I'm just wondering if this was, okay, let's just go ahead and lock him up even longer because someone else may come along that he's actually interested in. I'm sure he didn't want to go to the Knicks, even if they would have allowed him. Too many other issues with the Knicks as well.
Yes.
As far as management, dealing with ownership, things like that. So, no, he probably didn't want to go in the first place. But I just kind of thought, okay, well, maybe this is just them saying, okay, let's go ahead and lock him up because we like him. We want him here. Let's just lock him up now. Now he's got another 4 years with us under contract. 2-2. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I think Seth Payne used a good analogy this morning where he said it's like if your wife suddenly lost like 10 pounds from going to Pilates and now, you know, she's getting a little more attention from the guys. It's like, you better ramp up your appreciation for her and make sure that she knows you really like her because now you're getting that attention from other people. And it puts you at your... So that's similar. Ime got some attention from others this offseason. The Rockets realized, like, oh, we better step up our game to make sure he's satisfied and he's good right here and we don't lose this guy now that others are catcalling him. I like the contract because, yes, of course, he's done such a great job. Why would you want him to go anywhere? The feedback we got from listeners yesterday was 99% positive on the contract, so that was good to see.
Yeah, I mean, Rockets haven't been this good in years.
Yeah, that's the other thing. He's been your best coach in a while. And I think the Knicks, like you said, Ime shouldn't be interested to jump ship from the Rockets to the Knicks. And I think also you look at the Knicks and see they just fired their most successful coach, or the coach that was coming off their best season in 2.5 decades, and that still got him fired. So I like the stability. In the NBA, you know, we always say NFL means not for long. I don't know what the NBA acronym could be turned into, but so often we see a guy win Coach of the Year and then get fired right that same offseason.
Yeah.
I like this because I think he's a really good coach. You're building something here. You need that long-term stability, so that's good. Now, spinning it forward, do you think this has any impact on the whole Kevin Durant sweepstakes, the big story of the offseason right now, do you think this plays any sort of role in Durant's decision-making or the Rockets' ability or even willingness to go get Durant now?
Well, I think you just said it, stability. I think that would play a part in Kevin Durant choosing, you know, if the Rockets is the choice, because apparently it's going to be his choice, right? That's what it seems like. The Suns are going to go, or they're going to try to get him to where he wants to. That's what it seems like. So if the Rockets do end up being the choice, yeah, I think stability would play a big part in it. He can say, you know, that doesn't mean he's going to be here for 4 years, Kevin Durant, but if he's here for at least two, he knows the coach is going to be in place. He knows that this philosophy and this culture that Udoka has been able to build so far and is still developing here in Houston, it's going to be here. So I think that stability means something. Not a lot of stability in Phoenix. We see that's been just a mess. That has just been a mess, and he sees that. So I think his next place he wants to go, probably stability will mean something to him. So, yeah, I think it definitely will mean something.
We'll circle back to this Durant conversation later on as well, and we'll get to some audio later from Shams talking about the market for Durant right now. But real quick before we hit the break, and we'll probably spend more time on this later, but when you hear the favorites that Durant wants to go to, Heat, Spurs, Rockets, how do you think the Rockets match up with those other two options for Durant?
The Rockets have all the assets, and they're ready to win now. If you bring in a Durant, they were the number two seed this year. Yes, they went out in the first round It happens. Still a young team. But if you bring in a Durant, depending on what you got to give up for him, no, I think the Rockets would be the best choice, even over the Spurs. Because allegedly the Spurs might be his top choice right now. But I think if you're looking at Durant wants to go somewhere and win another ring. I don't think the Spurs, even with him, I don't think they would be closer than the Rockets. I just don't.
Yeah, I think the Rockets should be. I think the Heat are a distant three. I think the difference between the Rockets and the Spurs are the Rockets have already shown that they can win with this group where the Spurs are still trying to get there. And then I think the other part is the coach. Spurs just hired a new coach and a first-time coach who took over after Popovich had to step away last year. And the Rockets have a good coach, a very good coach, and now they have him for a while, and that's Durant's guy, and you locked them up. So, I think this actually helps a little bit in that whole in the arms race for Kevin Durant, if you will, between those three. But we'll circle back to the whole Durant conversation later on as well. Hey, when we come back, was Stroud actually better in year two than he was during his great rookie season? We'll get to that next. It's The Drive.
Are we going to get your flowers for sure?
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Was C.J. Stroud actually better in year two than he was during that great rookie season? Get to that here on The Drive. The fellas are out today. I'm Luke Morrow alongside Chris Partee and T-Mill holding things down on the other side of the glass.
Yep.
You can text the show 713-572-4610. Also get in touch with us through the YouTube or Twitch streams as well. C.J. Stroud had that great rookie season. One of, if not the best, rookie seasons for a quarterback that we've seen. But was he actually better in year two? Maybe that sounds crazy on the surface, but Sam Monson, who used to be with Pro Football Focus, and then I don't even know who he's with now, but he was saying on some podcast this week, he actually thinks Stroud was better in year two than year one. Here's what Sam had to say.
I mean, look, year one was fantastic. It's one of the best rookie seasons of all time. In a weird way, I was more impressed by Stroud in year two because the situation around him completely fell apart. Offensive line was hot garbage, couldn't pick up a stunt, couldn't, you know, any sort of exotic look from in terms of pressure. The thing just collapsed completely. And he still, like, on the biggest situations on 3rd and 15, still found a play. I was really impressed by him in year two. So if the situation around him can be pieced back together this year, and look, they've made big strides, at least at receiver, with what they've done in the draft. I mean, I have very high expectations from Stroud.
I think it's fair to have very high expectations for Stroud this year, assuming those things improve. Absolutely. But the question here, as he laid out in the beginning, was year two better than year one? Statistically, it certainly was not close to year one. No. But based off of the eye test, what you saw, what Stroud had to deal with, Chris, what do you think about that? Would you say that Stroud was actually better in year two than he was during that great rookie season?
I can say in certain aspects, like Sam talked about there, you can make an argument for that. But, I mean, overall, I would say no. I mean, the offense in general just sputtered most of last season, right? Yeah, they had times where they showed flashes of what they were the year before, but it wasn't consistent enough. And CJ is at the head of that. He has to be, right? I mean, we can talk about the offensive coordinator as well. We know how that went. He's been replaced. But now, it sounds like Sam is talking more about, you know, I used this word earlier with the Astros, resiliency. Like, we saw some resiliency, I guess you could say, from CJ Stroud. But I don't think that necessarily means that he was still better than the previous year. Because, again, that's one of the greatest rookie seasons we've seen probably ever in the NFL from a quarterback.
Yeah, I don't think, just to answer the question, I'm with you. I think, no, he was not better in year two than year one. I think you can certainly say things were harder around him and that brought down the play. But because of what he was dealing with and what he was still able to do, it still doesn't exceed what we saw in that incredible first season. He was not better. The numbers obviously don't compare. In his rookie season, he had a quarterback rating of 101. Last year, he had a quarterback rating of 87, which is closer to kind of the middle of the pack. But even just with the eye test, there was just a lot of, you know, like, there were questions about that shoulder, of course, and there were questions about even, like, the mechanics during the middle. He missed a lot of throws that you were just not used to seeing him miss to some open guys where he wasn't doing that so much in year one. So there's some other questions, too, about beyond just the stats, that eye test and watching and some of the chances he had to take. Did the Texans make things easier on him last year than his rookie season?
No, they did
not. I don't
not.
Think so.
Not at all.
But still, doesn't mean he was better last year than what we saw. He was so good in 2023.
Yeah, no. I think we're on the same page here. Not better, but the eye, you know, stats are one thing. We can look at the stats, but even in watching him play last year, you could just see that something was different. It was not exactly the same as it was in his rookie campaign. You could see that. So when we're talking about the stats not lining up and then also the eye test not lining up, it's hard for me to say that, yeah, with all that was going on around him, I'm still going to say that he was better in year two. No. Now, everything wasn't CJ's fault as far as, you know, why the offense wasn't as good, but he still gets some blame for that. He is the quarterback. He's going to get all the praise when they play great, when they play well. So you got to get a little bit of the criticism when you don't.
Yeah, right. I think to kind of split hairs, he was underrated last year because of what he had to deal with. But that still doesn't take him to the level of being beyond his rookie year. Right? I mean, the Texans put him in some tough spots last year because of the offensive line, of course, penalties, being behind the chains. Even the run game was inconsistent. So there was a lot of second and longs and third and longs. And that Stroud would have to deal with. And that's a tough spot for the quarterback. But I would also say, and I've been a Stroud defender, and I'm still a Stroud guy, so I don't want this to come off the wrong way, like I'm being really tough on him.
Uh-oh.
But there's always this idea of, like, you know, we always like to make and look, let me also couch this whole statement with, of course, the offensive line was not good last year. I don't think Bobby Slowik was good enough. There's a reason why he's gone. A lot of things were not good enough around Stroud last year. You had the injuries at the wide receiver. Absolutely. All those things are true. But we always like to make excuses where, you know, we always like to blame someone, where you'll blame the government, you'll blame your wife, you'll blame your boss, whatever it is. And so I think if you are this great quarterback, which I believe Stroud still has that ability, it's like going back to Tom Brady or even a Peyton Manning. And granted, Peyton played with some really good guys, but you'd always say, like, he makes his receivers better. You're not always going to have the perfect scenario, the perfect setup.
It's rarely going to be perfect.
Right.
Rare.
And I would compare it to almost like a relationship where everyone's going to get along well early on, but then once one of you loses your job or the in-laws have to move in or whatever, you have to downsize, finances change, the kids are sick, whatever it is, that's where you're really tested and that's where you really find out. And so similar where, yeah, the chips were down last year, but that doesn't totally excuse. I can't just wipe out everything we saw from the quarterback because of all those. And there was plenty of issues around him, but I still need to see you rise above it even more.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what the all-time greats, the great quarterbacks that we've seen in this league, that's what they do. When the offense is not perfect, when things aren't perfect around them, the great ones have the ability to rise above it, like you just said. They have that ability. I'm not saying CJ doesn't have that ability, but we need to see him show that a little more. And he wasn't always able to do that. There were times when he could do it, but it wasn't consistent enough last season.
Yeah, I think he didn't show enough for me to say last year was better than his rookie season.
No.
All right. So that's
for
that's,
me, no, no.
That's
no.
Where why I went in that direction. Moving forward now, though, how big of a step? Tyler's heard me use this analogy or metaphor far too often about bands in the music world, where it's always about that third album. The first album's always the best. Second one's usually not that good.
Sophomore slump.
And then the third's the make or break album for all bands. And if you have a good third album, you continue on as a band. If you have a bad third album, usually that's the end of you. So for Stroud, great first year, not as good second year. This is the make or break third year. How big of a jump now with a new offensive coordinator, with a new offensive line coach? We got the problems, the cancers, if you will, out of this locker room or coaching staff. How big of a jump do you anticipate seeing from Stroud now in year three? If, at least according to Sam, he was already better in year two than year one, what should we expect in year three?
I think it's tough because you just talked about something there, and that's variables. There's a lot that's going to go into him having a better season than he did last year. And we're on the same page in the fact that neither one of us think year two was better than year one. No matter what Sam pointed out in this article or in the, on the podcast, he was talking about this issue. No, I there's no way that he was better in year two. Just eyeball test and statistics, neither one bear that out for me. And obviously you either. But going to year three now, first of all, I don't think year three is as drastic as to say make or break. He's going to be here. He's the franchise quarterback. I think everyone would be happy if we could get him back on track to where year one was.
Of course.
Statistically, eyeball test, all of the above. Now, again, some of those variables are, is the offensive line going to be better? you got a new offensive coordinator now. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a whole thing of, you know, learning a new scheme, learning the intricacies of the scheme and, you know, what this coordinator likes to do and him learning what CJ likes or what works best for him. So all of those things, there's going to be, even though I know we got camps, training camps, OTAs and all these things, but there's going to be a section of the season in the beginning, you know, the first couple weeks there where they're still filling out each other, I believe, as far as offensive coordinator and the quarterback, which is CJ Stroud. So I believe everyone will be happy if we can just get CJ back, if they can get CJ back on track to where he was trending after year one. Because if you really look at it now, if you go year one at the end, trending up. Year two, if not trending down, then, you know, it's just, you know, the arrow is lateral.
Yeah.
Right?
I've said this often, and I know I've gotten texts on, and I've gone back and forth with listeners. I'm still a Stroud guy because you don't see a quarterback play like he did in year one and then just disappear, never get back to that level.
Out of nowhere, yeah.
And I do subscribe to the sophomore slump. Go back and look. Matt Ryan, Drew Brees, Baker Mayfield, even. There's so many guys that did take that step back in year two and then took a big step forward in year three, and I do anticipate that from Stroud. I think Jaden Daniels will take a big step back this year. I believe in the whole sophomore slump thing. So I am a Stroud guy, but absolutely, we do need to see more growth off of year two to year three.
But I think one thing that's important is, and we can probably find this, but how many of those guys had a coordinator change that had that sophomore slump and then going into year three had a different coordinator than they did the first 2 years?
That's a good question.
Like that,
I'm trying to think just off the top of my head.
I believe that matters a lot. I really do. I believe that matters a lot.
Yeah. No, I think so. I think it's a big change. I mean, that's the linchpin to this whole thing is how good Popovich is as the offensive line coach and how good Nick Caley is, both guys in the role for the first time, so we really don't know. It could just be a repeat of last year, everyone saying, Bobby Slowick's doing a terrible job. Well, you know, Nick Caley, we hope he's...
Everyone hopes he's going to be
course,
fine.
But we can only hope.
And improve things, but we won't know until we get out there week one.
Right.
Till they're on the field and we see what his offense looks like. We won't know. So we still got, what, 2.5 months? 2 months, whatever it is, to the season starts.
Yeah, just roughly, over 2 months, yeah.
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah, training camp begins in 32 days.
Yeah.
But who's counting?
But who's counting?
Joseph on YouTube said, I agree with you guys about CJ Stroud, but it does bring the question up about how Brady or Peyton would have been in the same situation CJ Stroud faced last year. Yeah, it's a fair question. We'll never know. My whole thing is...
Say Brady or Peyton Manning?
Yeah.
Go back and look at Peyton Manning's offensive line in those early years in
Indy. Well, he wasn't very good early on, Peyton.
Well, his first year, he wasn't good. He bounced back the second year. He had a better sophomore year than he did his rookie year. But those first few years in general, the offensive line wasn't great in Indy.
My thing on Stroud, to try to clarify, is that I'm not saying the excuses aren't fair. He had a lot that wasn't working around him last year. I just think he's too talented of a quarterback for us to just completely eradicate him from any sort of responsibility because it's just like, oh, Bobby Slowick, oh, offensive line. I think if we did a pie chart of blame, yes, a portion goes to the offensive line. A portion goes to even the wide receiver injuries, Bobby Slowick, Chris Strouser. But then a pretty sizable portion still has to fall on the quarterback because at the end of the day, it's kind of like the whole quarterback wins stats. And people say, quarterback wins, what a stupid stat. But it always comes back to the quarterback. Even if your defense is terrible, right? The blame, the responsibility, and the credit always comes back to the quarterback for better or worse.
Yeah, I mean, and I'll be honest, CJ Stroud changed my mind with that first season, even halfway through, because I wasn't sure how good he was going to be being an Ohio State quarterback. And we know a lot of the Ohio State guys come to the NFL and they haven't done a lot over the years. So I wasn't completely sold, but he changed my mind with that first season. He really did.
I was waiting for this text from the 832. They said RG3 and Vince Young beg to differ regarding players never repeating their year one performances. Those are the two names people always say.
RG3 and who?
Vince Young. I forgot to clarify, I'm not talking injuries, which was the case for RG3. Of course,
yeah, he got hurt.
If a guy has a career-ending injury or career-altering injury, yes, they're not going to repeat. Let's knock on wood, hope that never happens to any Texan here moving forward. Vince Young, people always say, but Vince, he was a different quarterback. He had a completion percentage of 50% his rookie year. He had more interceptions than touchdowns. He found a way to win some games.
And he won games, yeah.
But when you watch Vince Young as a rookie, he was kind of had that Tebow effect of you wonder, like, how is this guy doing this? Because He's not making these plays from the pocket. He's just kind of ad-libbing and doing things. And he was one of my best friends as a Titans fan.
Like backyard football.
Yeah, it was fascinating to watch how he would pull off some of those comebacks in late game drives. There was one game in particular where they won like on a 90-yard touchdown pass from Vince Young. He's like, how do they do this? But it doesn't compare to Stroud in the way they performed their rookie year. I'm talking more of what we saw from a pocket passer.
Yeah.
We see a lot of guys, even Lamar Jackson, can come in and run around, and they're just a great athlete, and they catch the league by surprise that first year with their legs or their athleticism. But we cannot compare the numbers. Stroud is a rookie to Vince Young as a rookie. It's not in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
People always bring up those two quarterbacks. RG3, because of injuries, doesn't apply. And Vince Young, I don't think that applies either. I don't think he had the great rookie season that we would compare to CJ Stroud. I think they're in different galaxies, really.
The numbers don't bear that out.
No.
They don't.
Hey, we'll continue the Texans conversation. This actually kind of goes hand in hand with what we were just talking about with Stroud, trying to take this big step forward in year three. Are we buying the Cole Popovich hype? Because there's a lot of it right now. We'll talk about that next. It's The Drive.
Oh, it's 3 o'clock.